anymore. He was holding a Bowie knife instead. The Kevlar, then, had been a miscalculation. "Hello, I'm here to make a delivery," I said, because at heart I was a bit of an asshole.
"Charlotte Holmes,"
Hadrian Moriarty said, his eyes raked over me in a vicious sweep.
"What is it that you want?"
"I like your shop," I said, because I did. It was confused and a bit crowded, but even through the half-open front door I could tell it smelled like roses. I was fond of roses. It was often in my best interest in these situations to think abstractly instead of whether or not my quarry was about to kill me.
"No costume?" he snarled. "No stupid little glasses?"
"Doesn't the wig count?"
"No sidekick?"
"No," I said. "You took care of that." We regarded each other. His eyes narrowed. He put one heavy foot on the lip of the truck, then the other. And then he was muscling me to the back, up by the cab, past the boxes and out of sight. "Where's Philippa?" I asked. "Or was she not given her very own passport and allowed to skip along out of the country too? Are only the boys allowed to hopscotch the pond?"
"There it is," he said. "That cheeky mouth. I was wondering where that girl had gone to."
"I'm not here about your sister. I'm here about Connecticut." I was, I realized, on guard for more than just straightforward assault. Hadrian had that sort of low, hungry stare I associated with men like Lee Dobson. Sex, it seemed, was never about sex. It was about power and about subjugation, and Hadrian had been on the losing side of both those dynamics for quite some time. That said, I was currently sober, and I had stopped scratching my right knee months ago, and even if everything inside of me was screaming, I was still holding my box cutter and would not hesitate to carve out both his eyes if he laid a single finger on me. Distantly, I remembered that this man had made out with my uncle. I would have to have a word with Leander about that, if we ever spoke again.
"Connecticut," Hadrian was saying. "Forget Connecticut. Let's talk about Sussex for a second, shall we? How about your mother drugged Leander and sent him off to hospital to blame it on me and my sister? Tidy, wasn't it? Brother-sister forgers with a cursed last name, poisoning one of your sainted Holmeses. You must have loved that."
"Lucian had been blackmailing my parents. He sent a home nurse to poison my mother. Turnabout is fair play."
"Is it now? Is that why Milo killed August? Fair play?"
I had been waiting for this question. "No," I said as coldly as I could. "He thought August was you. He thought you were trying to hurt me." We regarded each other.
"Kid,"
Hadrian said, and there was the smallest touch of humor in his eyes.
"You've opened quite the can of worms, haven't you?"
"You could say that." Someone was walking quickly by the truck. He and I both fell silent. "You don't seem to have a bad setup here," I said finally.
"No, it could be worse."
His sister, Philippa, was languishing under house arrest for poisoning my uncle, one of the few crimes she hadn't, in fact, committed. His brother August was dead. His brother Lucian was still, by all accounts, pursuing a vendetta that would bring the rest of us to our knees. Working in a floral stroke frame shop in Brooklyn was not a bad deal, all considered. Hadrian saw my mood soften. He smiled toothily. "Connecticut," I said, squaring my shoulders. "It isn't worth it. I don't care what it is you're actually delivering. Stop while you're ahead."
"I have my orders," he said.
"From your brother. Your brother orders you around," I said, and watched that one land. "Do you actually want to get back into this game after you've escaped it? What, your brother gave you a passport so now he owns you? Please, you're better than that. Get out from under his thumb." Hadrian set his jaw.
"Don't tell me who I'm beholden to."
"I'm telling you what's in your best interest."
"And what's that?"
I stared at him, gauging the size of the bluff I was about to make. Despite our shared history, I didn't know him well enough to read a change in his tells or his behavior from the last time I'd seen him. All I knew was that once he had been a talk show guest all over Britain, discussing art and antiquities with a sort of smart charisma that I saw no sign of now. The forged paintings that he and Philippa had sold, the ones that fetched the highest prices, were ones that he had painted himself. He was still painting now. Any child could have told you that from the pigment beneath his fingernails. Through the shop window I'd seen the canvases hung against the back wall, darkly romantic portraits done as though in a series. The last of August, I thought. The thought of a pocket watch. August had said that art was his brother's only passion. I reached out a hand for Hadrian to shake. He took it. My fingers were dwarfed in his. "Don't make the delivery," I said. He stared at me. "Don't make it. I don't care if they're going to exhibit your paintings. It isn't worth it." Hadrian jerked his hand away, and I knew then for sure what was in the boxes at my feet. "They're not worth it, the students there," I said. I believed what I was saying. It would be pearls before swine. These particular pearls were also made by swine, though that wasn't the issue at hand.
"I thought you'd be here to get some revenge for that Watson boy."
Hadrian cleared his throat.
"You don't seem here for that."
I looked at him. I had brought a small revolver. I had worn a Kevlar vest in case it came to a scuffle over the gun. I had come as myself so he could know, without a shadow of a doubt, that it was my doing, if I had in fact decided to kill him. I had thought about it for months. Hadrian, Philippa, Lucian, remove them as though they were rats that had gotten into the walls of my home. Remove the threat, and then I would let the matter rest. Let my former friend get on with his life, as he so obviously and wisely wanted nothing to do with me. I would perhaps go to prison. Prison didn't scare me. I understood how to handle monotony interspersed with the occasional deadly interlude, and anyway, I'd always thought I'd end up there eventually. Perhaps I wouldn't. I was tidy in my methods, and I might walk away from it all. Perhaps I would finish my formal schooling and take a position in a lab somewhere, do graduate work in chemistry. I'd have to find a specific topic to pursue instead of dabbling, but there could be pleasure in specialization. I'd certainly interacted enough with poisons to want to know more about antidotes, and perhaps I could change my name. A symbolic gesture, but one that might allow for appropriate mental gymnastics. No one had expectations for Charlotte something. No one directed her Saturdays but her. I thought about it. An apartment overlooking something appropriately scenic, some rain or fog or smog. I could compose again on my violin. I hadn't written a melody since I was a child. I could, after refining it, of course, perhaps play it for myself. I would play it for myself. It was what I'd always done, after all, and if I was lonely, I could cry myself to bloody sleep. "You need to feel the blood underneath all that reason," D.I. Green had said. Looking at Hadrian Moriarty, I didn't feel angry. I felt very, very tired. I knew then that I didn't want to kill the three of them after all. "Leave Watson alone," I said. "And I'll leave you alone." To his credit, he considered it.
"If I don't?"
"Then I'll see you again soon." With that, I jumped down from the truck. I wasn't a sentimental fool. I didn't plan on forgiving him, but neither would I gun him down. I had the manifest, the delivery confirmation, the bottle and the hair and the radio presets and my $700 Kevlar vest intact. I had seen a moment of doubt in Hadrian Moriarty. It had been a productive afternoon. As I passed the women in the shop, I saw they were all painting the Eiffel Tower. The woman I'd been watching had turned her skeleton into a tall, elegant structure. She depicted it at night, lit up and twinkling. Perhaps she hadn't been fired. Perhaps she'd quit her job instead to take a trip to Paris. The evidence didn't quite suggest it, but perhaps this time I'd give her the benefit of the doubt. I had been to Paris before. I had been to Berlin and Copenhagen and Prague and Lucerne and most of Western Europe in the name of an education or in pursuit of a crime, and I had seen nothing of what made the world worth looking at. That was a pity, now that I thought about it. At the subway stop, I checked the weather again, then my email, then my bank account balance, and when I saw the number, I swore out loud. I had to refill my coffers. I made three calls and got on the train, my nerves already shot. My day had taken a turn. I would have to spend the next few hours reading celebrity gossip blogs.
11. Jamie. The yelling wasn't the kind from a fire or an explosion. It was panic, for sure. How else could I hear it through the heavy door? But from what, I didn't know. All I knew was that there wasn't any screaming. At least, not yet. Elizabeth looked at me, her face white, her hand on the push bar of the door. We were seconds from making it out of this unscathed. "Go," I told her. "No one's seen you." Elizabeth had always been smarter than me. She didn't protest or ask what I'd do. She didn't take my hand and refuse to go. Without another word, she bolted into the open air. I pounded down the tunnel toward the party. The overhead lights cast shadows down the hall, catching in the doorways, making monsters, policemen, Moriartys. By the time I reached the door, the noise had stopped. Somehow that was worse. There were 20 people at the party, and they were all clustered around something on the floor. Someone had turned the music down instead of cutting it completely, and the sound skittered crazily above us, a voice howling, "Get it, get it, get it, get it," while the strobe light flickered in time. The power strip was by the door. I jerked the cord out of the wall. Everyone looked up at me. "That's him," someone said. "Watson," Kittredge said, incredulous. "Tom said his laptop got all fucked up." The girl on the floor curled up with her arms around her knees, crying and crying. "What happened?" I asked. "What did she take?" Murmuring, exchanged glances. Randall clambered to his feet, his eyes hard. "What do you mean, what did she take? What did you give her?" The feeling like I'd done this all before, that I knew how it would end. "That's the girl who brought pills with her, right? I saw she had a baggie with her. She dropped them in the hall. I didn't pick them up because clearly I didn't want her to take them. What is going on? Is she sick? Does she need a doctor?" Randall did that rugby player thing I'd never been good at, where he squared his shoulders to make himself look bigger. "Someone stole her poker money. She had a grand with her." "A grand?" Usually the buy-in for a game was 200, which was already too rich for my blood. With a grand, you could buy an entire car. A crappy one, but still. "Are those the new stakes? You guys are out of your mind." "Of course they aren't," Randall said. "Anna was staking her friends because she's nice like that, and someone took it right out of her bag, which you picked up in the hall." Whatever the saying was about good intentions and the road to hell. "I hope you've all turned out your pockets already," I said. "We all did," Kittredge said, still on his heels. He had a hand on the girl's, Anna's, back. "You have it. Do it." I reached into my pants and pulled my pockets inside out, then the pockets of my jacket. I kicked off my shoes and shook them out. I tossed everything I had onto the floor, which was nothing except an almost empty wallet and my mobile phone. "He was out in the hall after Tom came back in," Anna said. She lifted her chin. "He could have stashed it somewhere." "Tom, you were there. Did you see me take any money?" He was staring at the ground, unresponsive. Right, I thought. I'm the bad friend. The reversal didn't bring me any satisfaction. "Is this $1,000 for real?" I asked. "Did your friends see it?" Her friends looked at each other. "I saw it," the brunette girl said, but there was a note of doubt in her voice. "I'm calling the police," Anna said. "This is so messed up. I can't even believe you guys." Kittredge rocked back. "Whoa, no. We'll settle this here. No one is calling the police." "No one is getting expelled, more like," Randall said. "Because we all would if they caught us here." "Where did you put the money, Jamie?" Kittredge snarled. "Just tell us and we could pretend it didn't happen. There are like a million rooms down here." "The mythical money. The money no one's seen." I stared at him. "The money you've arbitrarily decided that I've taken. Don't condescend to me, Kittredge." "You're the one who sounds condescending," Tom said into the sullen silence. "Hello," Anna was saying into her phone. I'm calling to report a theft. Randall looked at Kittredge, who looked at Tom, who looked at the girls who'd come in with the girl on the floor. Everyone waiting for permission to do the shitty thing and leave. Just go, Lena said from the corner. I hadn't seen her. She was sitting silently on a folding chair in the corner, flanked by the rows of bikes on the wall. She had her top hat on, the one she always wore to parties, but tonight it made her look like a sort of sad clown. I'll stay. If you're so sure Jamie's done it, then he can wait here for the cops, too. Sherringford School? The girl was saying to the 911 operator. Everyone else filtered out, whispering. Carter Hall? We're underground. Yes, the access tunnels. How did you know? She followed them out into the hall, presumably so she didn't have to keep looking at my face. Lena leaned back in her chair. Fun party, huh? They decided it was me pretty quickly. You've been, like, so much fun recently and so awesome to hang out with. I think it's obvious why. Thanks, I said sourly. Anytime. It was a good space for a party, I thought. Industrial and strange, made entirely of metal and bike wheels. Someone had set up a poker game in the corner by a broken-down ATV, but now the little piles of cards were kicked out, scattered on the ground. Beside me, Lena's shampoo booze bar had been organized according to what looked like bottle color. I started pulling them off the table, intending to toss them out. Stop, Lena said. I'm sure they'll want this for evidence. You're really leaning into this whole getting suspended thing, aren't you? She shrugged. They won't suspend me. Your family are major donors, then. You knew that, she said. But yeah, short of killing someone, I think I'm fine. I could hear the scrap of Anna's voice talking to someone in the hall, almost as though this was our cell and she was our warden. Elizabeth got an email telling her to be here, I said finally, from my email account. But I didn't send it. That's what I was doing in the hall, talking to her. This was planned. This was going to happen, or something like it was. Lena sat up a little straighter. I heard about your laptop from Tom. I frowned. I hadn't told him about the soda explosion, though maybe Elizabeth had. Well, I guess I'm saying that I'm not surprised. She had a baggie of pills with her, brightly colored, they were shaped like stars, moons. This money thing is so vague, I wonder if she meant to hang me with those and then found them missing and went for something else instead. I don't know, Jamie. Outside, Anna's voice fell silent. Hold on, I said, and opened the door. Can you come back in so I can ask you a question? I got a good look at her then, for the first time. She was wearing bright colors, a choker around her neck, her hair long and straight and blonde and glossy, and the look on her face said she'd rather eat a box of scorpions than talk to me a second longer. No, she said. That's fine, we can do it here. She was trembling a little, and while I didn't really want to frighten her, a part of me was glad someone else got a turn at being scared. How long have you been taking money from Lucien Moriarty? Anna set her jaw. You're crazy. No? Let's try this. How long have you been taking money from someone, anyone, to ruin my life? I could feel Lena draw up behind me. Jamie? She murmured. I whirled on her. She dropped the bag in front of me, on purpose, with witnesses. You're sure you don't know this girl? I thought this party was invite only. Did you know her friends? Have you even seen them before? I didn't know any of them, Lena said, and to my surprise, she sounded furious. On my other side, Anna was inching away from me like I had pulled out a gun. But I wasn't going to throw out some poor freshman in front of everyone. Jamie, you should probably, like, you should go. You brought this with you, didn't you? There was shit going on with you, and you came to this party, and... And I had to do my English homework, and you wouldn't give it to me, and... Fine, maybe I should have said something to you, but what exactly that didn't sound crazy? All these bad things are happening to me, but they have loads of plausible deniability. If it seems like I'm really clumsy lately and an asshole, I'm actually not. To my surprise, she said, How about, hey guys, I think I have PTSD, or, hey guys, more of that messed up shit is happening to me, which obviously isn't pretend because you've seen it for real when it happened to me before. Maybe we could have helped you. We who? You and Tom? What could you have done? I didn't want to drag you into it. And Tom, seriously? Since when does Tom want to get involved in my shit? Well, I would have. I was in Prague, Jamie. I was in Berlin. I watched you get taken away on a stretcher. I bought all that goddamn art. To my shock, Lena shoved me. Not hard, not to hurt me, just enough that I staggered backward into the hall. I could have done something. Maybe gotten you to do some therapy. Tom goes to therapy. Tom could have talked to you about it. But you just pretend... God, you're just selfish. You think you're the only one who misses her. This isn't about... Don't pretend this isn't about Charlotte. Why the hell does it matter to you, Lena? I was her best friend. Lena stared at me, eyes dark and angry. Well, she was mine. I can't... Lena, there's only so many come-to-Jesus moments I can have in a single night, okay? Guys, Anna cleared her throat. I have literally zero idea what you're talking about. Lena took her ridiculous hat off her head and swept it under her arm like we'd come to the end of a performance. Jamie, you, like, don't want friends, you know that? You just want to float in your little misery bubble alone. Then you walk around being all like, I'm miserable, I'm so alone. Well, you do it to yourself. I've seen what this Lucian guy is like, okay? I was there. We would have believed you. The police would be here soon. There would be questions and handcuffs and an interrogation room and questions from the dean, calls from parents who thought I was a thieving scholarship loser, a killer, a boy who stuffed jewels down girls' throats, and I had put on so much speed in the last year that I had thought I'd left this all behind me. Now I'd been suddenly slammed into reverse. And fine, fine, if it came to that, I missed her. God, I missed her, especially now. Yeah, I told Lena, and she was right. She was right about all of it, and it didn't matter, because maybe I didn't want any other friends. Maybe I didn't want anybody but Charlotte. I couldn't cure the poison with anything that wasn't also poison. Missing her was sick and pathetic and made me a fucking fool, and maybe I hated myself so much for it that even now I couldn't look Lena in the face. Yeah, that's totally how it went down the last time. The police arrived, yawning and bored, and immediately took Anna away with them to be questioned. Lena trailed behind them for whatever reason. She was saying something about an ambulance. That took care of two of the uniformed officers, but left one behind to glare at me alongside my old friend, Detective Shepherd, who looked like he'd rather have swallowed a hive of bees than to be back on this campus again. By now, he and I knew the drill. He didn't even try to question me without my father, just left me to wallow while he examined the scene. The uniformed cop knocked a bike off its hook, and when it fell, it took down another and another, slow and unstoppable, like a rhinoceros playing slow-motion dominoes. Then the dean of students arrived in pajamas and robe and a pair of neon trainers, and my father after that, bright-eyed and, as always, horribly bushy-tailed. And after a huddled conference amongst the adults, the whole awful parade of us walked up to the headmistress's office in the clock tower on the hill, our shoes tracking slush and dirt into the paisley-carpeted entryway. "Like I said, I'd rather question him at the station," Detective Shepherd said as we stomped the snow off our feet. The dean shook her head. "You already took away the girl. I'm lucky I got here before you vanished Mr. Watson here."
"That's not how it's done."
"They got me out of bed," the dean said darkly. "After last year with the Dobson boy, we've come up with a new way of handling these situations. And that new way hauled me out of my house at midnight on a weekday. So yes, we are handling it here. I have no idea why that child called the police. This is an internal matter." As everyone started up the stairs, bickering, my father hung behind. He looked as energetic as though he'd just drunk a pot of coffee and run a triathlon. I hated him a little bit right then, but I guess I had a lot of frustration to go around.
"So perhaps I should have picked you up when you asked me to," he said.
"Probably." I took off my gloves and stuffed them in my pockets. The clock tower offices were surprisingly warm. He lifted an eyebrow.
"No, Dad, why aren't you taking this more seriously? Dad, why aren't you cursing my name and wailing over our misfortune?"
"Honestly," I said, "I've been pretty shitty lately.
I'm not going to tell you what to do. Just go ahead and be your weird self.
Thanks, he said dryly. But the detective looks a bit like he wants to disembowel you. Shepard was waiting on the landing, watching us. So shall we go on and be our weird selves in front of the firing squad? They might appreciate some of your wailing if you want to try it out.
The head of school's office took up the top floor of the tower, and we clustered inside of it, everyone waiting for their cue to sit. The headmistress herself was an imposing presence in a crowd of exhausted adults. She was scrubbed clean, perched at the edge of her desk in a suit, while her assistant poured coffee out into ceramic cups.
"Miss Williamson," my father said, extending a hand.
"James Watson, Jamie's father. It's a pleasure. I only wish we could be meeting under better circumstances."
"Yes," she said simply. She had been head of school last year as well. I don't know how often she actually encountered better circumstances when it came to dealing with me.
"Please sit, all of you. Harry, hand around the coffee, then go handle the phone. We'll have calls before tonight is over."
"Can you update us if they find the money?" I asked, sitting down on her settee.
"Once they find out what happened?"
The headmistress and Detective Shepard exchanged a look.
"We'll see," he said finally.
"Jamie,"
the dean of students pulled an iPad from her bag. She had a rattle sticking up next to it. She'd left small kids at home.
"I've pulled your records. The events of last year notwithstanding..."
"He was cleared," my father interrupted.
"That matter's handled. We have the good detective here to thank for that."
The good detective rolled his eyes up to the ceiling and said nothing.
I thought, not for the first time, that maybe we should have had him help us bring in Bryony Downs, instead of, well, telling him about it, 2 days after the fact.
"Notwithstanding," the dean said, peering over her glasses, "Jamie's had a good academic year. APs, high grades, and then the last few days. I've looked at your teacher's grade books from this week. It says here that you did very poorly on a presentation that was nearly half of your semester grade for physics. The note says that you went off on a 3-minute tangent about space elevators."
"Space elevators?" I searched my memory of the presentation to find that I didn't really have one.
"Oh."
"Oh," the dean said.
"Yes. And you skipped your classes yesterday. You didn't hand in any of your work. You had a response paper due in AP English. You missed a quiz in AP Calc. Your French teacher says you sent him a bizarre email about him eating snails that looked like you put it through a translate program a few times. Monsieur Kahn's note under discipline expresses his dismay, and he also would like to know if you're a vegetarian and were offended by last week's lesson on French delicacies. Does any of this ring a bell?"
My father clapped a hearty hand on my shoulder.
"Eating snails is barbaric, isn't it, Jamie?"
I really, really should have changed my email password. How would I have been so stupid? How had I been so in my own head that I hadn't taken the one practical step that was actually in my power?
"This is erratic behavior, you see," the headmistress said, more gently than maybe I deserved. "And now a girl's been stolen from. Did you have any contact with her before tonight?"
I shook my head.
"Anna was attending a party thrown by Lena Gupta, your friend."
Detective Shepard muttered something like,
"Known associate."
I sunk my head into my hands.
"She sat at our lunch table the other day, but I didn't talk to her," I said through my fingers.
"The girl, I mean, Anna. I didn't send those emails. Someone broke into my room and deleted my physics presentation, so I stayed up all night redoing it, and so I didn't sleep much, and... okay, yes, I think space elevators are really cool, and so that part is completely my fault. Or my subconscious's fault, maybe, or I was, like, lack of sleep hallucinating. But someone broke into my room the next day while I was napping and hacked into my laptop."
"You didn't tell me this," my father said.
"They sprayed Diet Coke all over my room and into my laptop, and now my girlfriend hates me and Lena wouldn't give me the AP English homework until I went to Tom's party. And I am really, really tired. I have no idea what day it is. And honestly, I know Lucian Moriarty is behind all of this. It's all his fault."
The dean and the detective and the headmistress all peered at me.
"You're saying that a man named Moriarty ate your homework? the dean said. So to speak. Detective Shepherd cleared his throat.
It isn't totally impossible.
And then you attended an illicit party on a school night at which a girl is claiming you stole $1,000 of her money, the headmistress said. I should remind you that that's the reason why we're here. I don't usually call emergency midnight meetings about space elevators.
It isn't totally impossible.
Shepherd was in apparent psychic pain from having to say the words again. The space elevator? My father asked.
That it was a Moriarty.
See? I pointed at Shepherd. You were there last year. You remember.
Can someone please just bring in Charlotte Holmes? He asked. Where is she anyway? Usually if something blows up or someone's hurt, the two of you are lurking together around the corner talking about your feelings.
The dean of students' phone rang. Rang was a generous word. It was sort of a quacking sound. That's my babysitter, she muttered. How long will this take? Miss Holmes didn't come back to school this year, the headmistress said shortly. This is about Mr. Watson alone. Her assistant knocked on the half-open door. Miss Williamson, the museum curator is on the phone for you. And also, there's a student here named Lena Gupta. Yes, she sighed. Of course there is. Show her in. Lena swept in her furry coat. She unwound her scarf as she spoke, around and around and around. Anna is fine. You can call to check if you don't believe me. She says she bought the pills from Beckett Lexington in the cafeteria and that he gave her a sampler and that he said he'd see her in the access tunnels tonight to deliver the rest. So that's what the money was for. She frowned. Anyway, I had the cops call an ambulance once we got outside. I was really worried about her. Can I have a cup of that coffee? The room exploded. This is about drugs? The dean asked, turning to Ms. Williamson. Drugs. I thought this was about money.
Are you also on the E?
My father was studying my face. Exhausted, the headmistress put up her hands. Everyone, please. Lena, are you aware that the issue here isn't what substances your friend was abusing, but that she had money stolen from her? Lena was a genius, an absolute genius. By the time this giant mess she was creating was cleared up, the money would be either confirmed missing or non-existent. The freshman girl would get help for her drug issue, or at the very least, a stern talking to. And in the meantime, while the police went after yet another Sherringford dealer, we might have a chance to investigate the situation ourselves. Beginning with who Anna was working for. Lena frowned. You'll really have to check with her about that? I don't know. Mostly she was talking about E or MDMA. I don't really know the difference. She paused. Maybe she did both. Jamie, you take a drug test, right? Neither of us took anything. I hadn't done E, or anything really, for that matter, except for the occasional drink when I was in Europe, where it was legal. Even if I'd felt some draw toward pills or pot, my personal history with the police was a long and storied one, and I hadn't really ever felt like adding another chapter to it. I'll totally take a drug test, I offered. That one, at least, I could pass. My father's phone chirped with a text. He ignored it.
Who was at the party? The detective asked me, pulling out a notepad. I need a complete list of names.
The curator still wants to talk to you, the headmistress's assistant said. He's on his way. With a sigh, she capitulated, stepping out to take the call. The party, the dean said. Lena, who was there? Oh, Lena looked genuinely surprised at the question. I'm totally not going to tell you. You're not. Social suicide, Lena said. My father passed her a cup of coffee. I just ratted out Anna, and I can, like, feel my stock plummeting. Plus, it's my senior spring. Not worth it. Do you have any milk? There was a long silence. The headmistress came back in, frowning. Why aren't you taking Lena's statement? She asked Shepherd, who'd stopped writing.
I can't interview her without a parent present, Shepherd said. Remember, it's your policy.
Everyone is getting snippy, don't you think? My father whispered to me. Caffeine jitters, perhaps? We might have to suspend you if you don't, the dean of students said to Lena. Tell us who was at the party. Not the detective. Shepherd can interview Jamie. His dad's here, Lena said. Do y'all have any sugar? My father passed her the sugar. His phone chirped again. He ignored it. Aren't you going to answer that? The dean asked. Everyone, please, the headmistress said. Again, for the cheap seats. Jamie, who was at the party? I can't tell you, I said. If I went to burn this building down with all of us inside, I didn't think anyone would stop me. We were all already in hell anyway. Social suicide. Lena! My dad was talking about donating a new dorm, she said idly. I know you all like the three he's donated already. This isn't about the party, I said. This is about Lucien Moriarty. Look, I'm doing it right this time. I'm telling you about it. You are literally the authorities. Can we just actually get ahead of this shit show for once? All of you, please. Ms. Williamson crossed her arms over her blazer.
I am very, very tired. Jamie, I have a curator coming in with a delivery that is about to make your life a lot more complicated. Is that possible, though, for it to be more complicated? And I suggest you stop telling tales about some Mori-whatever scapegoat and actually cooperate.
Ma'am,
Harry said, sticking his head in.
The curator's here with his assistants.
It is midnight, the dean said loudly. Her phone was quacking again. Midnight. I am a single mother. I have four children, and my neighbor is watching them. My neighbor, who I woke from an actual dead sleep. How many more people are we going to pull from their beds because the students are cavorting in the access tunnels again? How is this in the least surprising? Which janitor did you pay for the key code this time, Lena?
Lena opened her mouth like she was going to answer and then thought better of it.
We all have children, Shepard said grimly. We all have responsibilities. A girl's been stolen from.
The dean stepped between him and the headmistress, physically cutting him off.
Really, what is the point, headmistress? So this boy is having a bit of a nervous breakdown in his senior spring. Stop the presses! It doesn't make him a thief or a druggist.
Druggy? My father supplied. I think druggist is actually the word for pharmacist, or perhaps you meant dealer.
He stopped short. I had clamped my fingers around his arm.
Dealer, the dean said. Yes, fine. Can we please go home?
One moment. Send Bill in, please, the headmistress said to Harry the assistant, who was still helpfully holding the door open.
Bill, the curator, turned out to be a harried-looking man with white hair and a pair of assistants who looked like Harry's fraternal twins. The two of them were dragging along giant framed portraits with such carelessness that I was shocked. One smacked his against the doorframe, swore, and kept on going. The headmistress, to her credit, didn't look surprised.
I assume these are the portraits we had commissioned for the Sherringford Centennial, and that something awful has rendered them unshowable, since you're treating Headmaster Emeritus Blakely's face like that?
The blonde assistant blinked rapidly. He had the painting turned in to face him so that Headmaster Emeritus Blakely's face was resting against his crotch.
I'd left my glasses. I'd been wearing my contacts to work, but I had my glasses back at the museum, and it was late, and I needed them because of the eye strain. And I went back, and someone had defaced these.
Bill raised a bushy eyebrow.
A bit confused, but that's the long and short of it. These were delivered this afternoon from New York. I'd expected professional art handlers, but they had come in a truck, in a stack. I hadn't unwrapped them yet. My assistant here came in tonight to find the wrappings everywhere, like some art raccoons or something had gotten in, and the portraits looking like this. I brought the most eloquent ones along here to show you. Didn't figure we'd have to handle them gently anymore.
The other assistant turned his portrait around.
It was Headmistress Joanne Williamson, cut large and magisterial, beautiful shadows on her face and neck, and in her arms a bound copy of the Sherringford Honor Code. It had a certain mood to it, windswept, romantic, a bit melancholy. It was a terrific portrait.
It looked, in fact, just like the Langenberg forgeries we were hunting down in Berlin. Except that someone had scratched out her eyes and written in hot pink spray paint, Watson was here.
I have to go to the bathroom, Lena said abruptly and left. Seriously, the words flew out of me.
Are you serious? Are you actually totally serious?
My father looked faintly worried.
Jamie, he said. Was. They spelled it was. W-U-Z. I'm in AP English. I read a lot. I read books. Big fucking books. I read Tolstoy and Faulkner and was.
Detective Shepard bit his lip.
You haven't been anywhere near the museum, he asked, busying himself with his notebook. Recently?
I didn't even know we had a museum. I was sounding sort of shrill.
Why on earth do we have a museum?
Bill, the curator, looked nonplussed.
We have a rotating historical exhibit normally, this being the centennial.
Right, I said. I'd had it. I was in some kind of farce. Any moment now, I'd be handed a rubber chicken and a knife and told to dance.
Well, I'm sure if you go back to my room right now, you'll find that someone has left 53 cans of hot pink spray paint on my floor and, like, a grammar book open to be conjugations. I don't care. I didn't do it. I didn't do any of it. But that obviously doesn't matter because I'm being framed. And pink spray paint? Hot pink? Are you kidding me?
Harry stuck his head back in.
Ms. Williamson, there's a call for you from a place called Just So Occasions.
He adjusted his glasses.
Do they know how late it is? We hired our artist through them, Bill said. I'd gone to them for some framing work and mentioned the project, and they'd recommended Mr. Jones's portraiture skills to us. Very reasonable rates.
Put them through, the headmistress said, rounding the desk to her phone.
Hello? Yes. Yes, this is highly irregular. Midnight?
Oh. Oh, I see. She frowned and scratched something down.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you. I do appreciate it.
Well, the dean asked after she hung up. The headmistress sighed.
Apparently Just So has caught their clerk vandalizing outgoing deliveries and wanted to warn us.
A former clerk, I should say. Apparently this vandalism was in retaliation for his termination. His name was Frank Watson. He defaced their store as well. This sounds like a case of mistaken identity on our parts. The detective gave me a hard look. I smiled at him as blandly as I could, but my pulse had picked up the second Ms. Williamson had answered the phone.
The owner had discovered it and thought to leave us a message in case he'd done the same to our delivery.
The headmistress sat down heavily in her chair.
I think she was surprised to actually reach someone this late. Gentlemen, ladies, I am so very tired. Mr. Watson, why don't you take 5 days to get yourself and your affairs straightened out?
Is that it? I asked.
Frank Watson, the headmistress stared at me. Frank Watson. Well, I suppose it adds up. I'm sorry to drag you into this.
So I'm not suspended then? She sighed.
I don't know yet. We'll see what the police say in the next few days about this supposed theft. And about these drugs, apparently. Take 5 days off campus. Stay with your father. If your name is cleared, we'll call it a leave of absence for health reasons. You're clearly not doing well. It's hardly a stretch. And if you are found culpable, then yes, it'll be a suspension, and we'll have to notify those colleges you've applied to of this new development.
5 days. It was a challenge, and I was already making my plan. I'd speak to Anna, bargain with her, get her to talk. I'd corner Kittredge and Randall, find out if either of them were holding a grudge, if someone on my hall had been hurting for money or hanging around Mrs. Dunham's desk too often by the locked drawer where she kept the master keys. Mrs. Dunham could tell me who she'd seen come in and out of the dorm, midday, faculty, or students or maintenance staff. Elizabeth could tell me if she saw anyone fleeing the scene once she'd gotten topside at Carter Hall. And Lena could give me the invitation list to the party as soon as she'd finished pretending to be the clerk from Just So Occasions on her phone in the bathroom.
It's suitable, the dean said, already halfway out the door. I'm done here. Headmistress, until tomorrow. Yes, good night, and my apologies. Bill, why don't you... Honestly, I don't know what to do with those paintings. I think they look sort of avant-garde, don't they? Keep them. Maybe the performing arts elective will want to shoot them out of cannons or something. Detective, I imagine we can pick this up tomorrow. And Jamie.
I was still reeling from all of it. The party, the emails, the exploded soda can, the brocade of the sofa scratching against the back of my neck, the defaced paintings, the parade of friends calling me out, the way Shepard was x-raying me with his eyes. There was so much to dread, and God knows I'd been a master of it these 12 months. I'd tangled myself so much up in the what went wrong to forget why I'd gotten involved with Holmes in the first place. There was danger here, loads of it, and my future at stake. There was a case to be solved. God help me, I was excited.
Moriarty, the headmistress was saying. Do I know that name from somewhere?
Just then, Lena slipped back in the door, face flushed and nakedly triumphant.
What did I miss? Anything good?
Miss Gupta, Shepard said. Do you mind if I use your phone?
12. Charlotte. When I was 14, I decided I was done. Fuck it. My mother was ineffectual, my father pathetic. I was the idiot child who thought I could mold myself into their image, that it was a worthwhile endeavor. I had taken them sporadically at first, the pills, when all the white crushing nothing got to be too much, when a new book or a game of chess with my brother couldn't take me from myself. I had a sort of dread all the time, a feeling that an axe was going to fall, and if I could hide myself behind a buffer, why wouldn't I do that? I halved them. To be safe, I told myself, but I knew really it was to make them last, and when my mother slipped at work and fractured her leg, I knew they'd send her home with more. And it was lifting those from her bathroom cabinet that finally got me caught. Caught is a prosaic way of saying it. Really, I was sent to rehab. The nuclear option, my father had said, the man who taught me to spot a lie and clean a gun and make myself into another person because I myself was never quite right, would never be. Better than to be another girl. He always was so disappointed that I was still his daughter underneath the disguise. At Paragon Girls San Marcos, I learned how to play five-card stud underneath the bolted-in television playing Days of Our Lives. I developed an interest in Days of Our Lives. At night, discussing Days of Our Lives with my current roommate, Macy, we taught ourselves how to fill a syringe and then how to flick it to expel the excess air. The syringes themselves were from the married orderly who was sleeping with the team's lead psychologist. Unbuttoned fly, 10 minutes late from lunch. I cheerfully blackmailed him for months. The contents were from my former roommate, Jessa, a hole cut into the heel of her boot, a trick I soon adopted myself, who visited us every Sunday when not filming the detergent commercials that were her bread and butter. This arrangement lasted for 4 rather transcendent weeks. They weren't friends. To make friends, one had to share oneself and one's past, and I would do neither. Conspirators worked with you in the moment. We were conspirators, and good ones. Then Macy ratted us out and was rewarded with a single room. Jessa was readmitted. I was summarily thrown out, and I took my habits with me. I thought, like a child, that I'd be allowed to go home. At this generation now, Petaluma, I tried. I did. I did everything to keep myself off it, the thing that crept under my skin like a pulse. Wanting, wanting, wanting. I was never anything if not in control of myself, and now I was a current for something else's electricity. I took up smoking. It was, as they said, an acceptable alternative. I was forced into yoga classes, which made me both limber and furious. I cried for the therapists who wanted me to cry. I wanted so badly to escape into myself, felt it like an itching in my gums, in my skin, a real burning fire in my blood that was not in the least metaphorical, and instead of crawling under my bed to die, I lined the girls up from my hall and told them each their shoe size just by looking at their feet. I told them what sort of pets they had at home. I looked at their palms like a fortune teller and told them if they'd ever had a job. None of us had, never, in our lives. Modeling didn't count. I did it, all that they asked. But my parents never came to visit. My uncle never called. My friends rotated in and out, and it wasn't friendship, it wasn't even conspiracy. It was them looking for an ear, and I was the silent sword who would listen. The funfetti cake they'd eat when they got out, the radio station they'd play on the way to the beach, the prom, the ex-girlfriend, the ex-boyfriend, the relentless pushing toward a future that they could see and I couldn't. What future? If I got better, where would I go? What did my next year look like? My resolve faded. I am, of course, human. I couldn't find a reason to change without any conceivable reward, and anyway, the teachers in rehab were wretched. I didn't need to relearn the periodic table. I had mental energy to spare. I put it to use. Taught the other girls how to palm their pills, how to cut holes into their mattresses. Did it in plain sight. I wanted to feel bigger, louder, stronger, so I took stimulants, took cocaine. It was the easiest thing to find. It was the most obvious drug I could do. I had a mission. At Petaluma, as with most places, it was far easier to be dismissed as a destructive influence than to ever graduate. So I was dismissed. I went back to Britain for my mother to evaluate my progress. As with all things, I'd been given an opportunity to go home right after I'd stopped wanting to. They didn't send me away this time. At home, I had my lab. At home, I had my violin. I had Wi-Fi and a driver and silence, so much silence, and no one to speak to and no lessons, no school. De Montchelier had gone off to work at a lab in Tunisia. No one thought to replace him. I took an online organic chemistry course. I finished it in 3 weeks, studying 16 hours a day, and then when I finished, I had 4 college credits and still the itching in my veins. I took a week to paint my walls black. I repainted them navy. Black again. Bone white. I ran endless miles on my mother's sad little treadmill, and there were good things, too. There were the plants I kept, there were the uninterrupted hours with my violin, and the plants again, the lab table, the sifting and mixing, the motions of my hands. Doing my work reminded me of my body. It gave me a modicum of control. Then I'd look down and remember my skin, the fact of it, and the burning would begin again. I woke up one morning to find I was content. I would feel this forever, I told myself, stretching my arms above me in bed. I could be alone. I could stop being a creature made of want. The next day, I began feeling the itching inside of my mouth. In short order, I had a supplier in Eastbourne. It was easier than breathing. I had my tells. Watson could never see them, though he looked for them every day. Maybe they were only there when I was using. Maybe without the drugs, I was a blank. My mother always knew when I was back on. She raised the alarm straight away. She was done, she said, watching the housekeeper empty my drawers. She would never touch my things herself. My father, of course, wasn't there. He was consulting at Whitehall now, in London. One of his contacts from Milo's school had finally wrangled him a position. When he'd been caught out at MI5 double-dealing information, his reputation had suffered, and without his good name, he had had no work. My father had steadfastly refused to take any job that didn't make him the lion at the top of the food chain, the charismatic megafauna. He had chosen not to work for years rather than feel that lack of power. We had suffered for it. And now he had wriggled his way back in. He was being groomed for office. It would be the first thing written down if he were vetted. Junkie daughter, a liability. I would get help. Or at least the appearance of help. I was sent to the cheaper places, the stranger ones, the ones that threw all of us addicts in together indiscriminately. The one in Brighton? I couldn't think in all that white. Girls in sweats with dirty hair, painted nails, and none of us allowed sharps, so our leg hair grew long. There was nothing to do, so I taught myself German. All day and night I spoke it in my head. Nicht, Donker, Nicht, Donker, Nicht, Donker. I told myself I'd go to see my brother, and I would know the language. I graduated. I went, and he looked at me like I was an object to wrap in glass. Went back. I had my schoolgirl French. Now I was fluent. It was easier to learn since I still had my Latin. Learned euchre, whist, cribbage, Texas Hold'em, played cards all day at a table full of girls trying not to want. I wanted. I couldn't stop. I took it and buried it in the ground beneath me, and when I couldn't, I found another way. I would try anything so I didn't feel like I was wrong. I grew like a plant would in the dark, twisting in on itself in search of any bit of light. I kept my own company. That was a polite way of saying that I was my only friend, and if I wanted to be alone, I'd have to get rid of myself. I didn't. The money ran out, or their patience did, and my parents finally pulled me home to stay. There was about to be a scandal. They were marshalling their forces. They'd hired August Moriarty, you see. I spent that evening in a luxury hotel in Midtown Manhattan, taking money from dilettantes. The girls I was playing poker with tonight, Jessa Genovese and Natalie Stevens and Penny Cole, were actresses. They were also models and hawkers of diet tea on social media, and girls who had very expensive athleisure wear gifted to them by brands. As Watson would say, they had a hustle. I could respect that. For some, the most thrilling chase had a bag of gold at the end, not a criminal. If I sound disdainful, it was because I was jealous of them. There was the matter of the acting. Any good detective worth her salt knows that to winnow information out of someone, you need to play a part. The all-consuming roles I'd been playing, like Rose, the fashion vlogger, were the extreme version of this. As I didn't have a badge, and so I couldn't compel answers, I had to resort to more underhanded ways of learning information. But even when being themselves, a good police detective needed to know when to intimidate, when to cajole, when to make promises, when to lie. I'm also sure that if you asked those police detectives late at night, when they were wistful and a little bit drunk, if they thought they'd do a bang-up job at some Shakespeare given the chance, the majority of them would say yes. I'd often thought I'd make a good Cordelia. But I digress. The other girls at poker night were doing something I'd always longed to do. They could play poker passably well. They were very beautiful and rich, and no one wanted to kill them, at least not that I knew of, and so yes, I was a little jealous. I was there because I needed the money. Jessa Genovese was hosting us in the junior suite she'd been living in while filming The Hollows, her new art house horror movie. She'd moved up from the detergent commercials she'd been doing when I first met her, back when she was my roommate at Paragon Girls San Marcos. Jessa had been 3 years older than me, which I'd known from the orderlies letting her smoke, and she was an actress, which I'd known because when she talked quite loudly and with her hands, projecting her voice, watching her plosives, scanning to see who was looking and changing her presentation accordingly. And she was Italian, yes, which would account for some of the volume and vivacity. I quite liked Italians, actually, but did not account for the way Jessa jumped at any small noise when she thought she was alone. She jumped also when she was reading and one surprised her, and as she was reading constantly, endless romance novels set in Scotland, she was constantly spooked. One might assume she had a quiet home growing up and was used to silence. But no, she smothered her reaction, kept it to a jerk of the lips, a stuttered hand on the bed, as though she was habitually afraid of someone creeping up on her and whatever they'd do to her then, as though she'd had to hide that fear in the past. One night, stoned in our room, I'd told Jessa the full extent of what I'd learned just by looking at her. She cried. She told me some things about her mother, and then she began to sketch out a plan for how my abilities would keep me in cash and her from ever having to go back home. Hence, the poker. In New York or London, whenever Jessa and I overlapped, we would meet for a game. She would bring along some friends, different ones every time. I would win their money, slowly, and then very, very quickly, and Jessa would make sure they were having enough fun that they didn't really care. Then, after they left, I would tell Jessa every last scrap of information I'd gleaned about them that night, for her to do with what she wished. 6 months ago, I had had quite a bit of fun pulling this scheme in London. Tonight, it made me feel a bit ill. But I was broke, and Watson was in danger, and there was currently $2,700 on the table, and Penny Cole and Natalie Stevens, the two girls tonight, could leave whenever they wanted to. and they didn't want to. Jessa was seeing to that. She'd ordered champagne and chicken fingers and fries and foie gras, and she was playing the kind of cool-toned,